That was the Ancestral Mind intro, wasn't it?
Yeah.
But we're doing a Tribe 10K that's going to post on the Ancestral Mind.
Oh, so should I have just not even done the intro music?
That's par for the course.
All Our right.
audience knows what to expect from your shenanigans at this point.
I wasn't sure which was the primary podcast.
So to fill you guys in, guys and gals, to be PC, we are going to post today's show on the Ancestral Mind, but it is really kind of geared towards the Tribe 10K podcast, which is a new business podcast we just launched. So if you're interested in business marketing, persuasion, psychology, any of the cool things more related to how to sell products, how to make a difference, how to live the life you want, then definitely make sure you subscribe to the Tribe 10K podcast, which is at Tribe10K.com. Is that correct?
Tribe10K.com. Yep.
Tribe10K. So 10K.com. And no, they'll find it. There's
yeah, it's there. It. There's it says right on the front.
Right. And so be forewarned though, Ancestral Mind audience. Now, while we do curse from time to time, since I am a little fired up from the meeting we had earlier, the topic is very near and dear to my heart as of, you know, 30 minutes ago, I might be prone to a bit of excessive cursing in today's show.
Yeah, Colin's ready to rage.
Definitely some ranting, some raging. I can feel boiling up in my blood. I'm already getting warm. I think my pits are sweating. We're ready to go.
I can feel it in my bones.
So what are we going to talk about today? In fact, we got to do the intro. So in the Ancestral Mind podcast, we cover all things health from an ancestral perspective. We want to help you build an ancestral mind so you can think about the decisions you make on a daily basis while considering the first principles of what makes you a sexy human beast. What about Tribe 10K?
Tribe 10K podcast. We're here to help you build your tribe, make the difference, do work that's meaningful on your own terms. We cover all things marketing, business, productivity, and we go into the deep topics of persuasion, psychology, lifestyle, and more. So that is what goes on over on the Tribe 10K podcast.
We've had a few guests on Tribe 10K already. So let's give them a preview of what that's going to look like.
Yeah, we've had Joel Carpenter on the Tribe 10K show.
Talk about storytelling and his...
Yeah. He gave us this great idea for the golden
thread.
Golden thread of your own life.
That was a really good idea.
Super awesome. He's written a movie. He's done defense work. And he's also doing...
Ex-Special Forces.
Yeah, risk management, which I thought was like a finance thing, but it was not.
Pure risk, like physical risk management.
Literally, like people might kill you risk. And then we had Ramsey on the next episode, who runs a travel business in Cuba. And basically, he brings Americans to Cuba and helps them get through all the different hoops that you need to get through in order to go down to Havana, because it's not easy.
Yeah, he's a smart guy. He looks very unassuming, like just the way he looks. But then he's like, I can tell he's definitely a smart guy. So yeah, that was a cool show. I didn't know what to expect. I went into that flying blind, and I came out of it wanting to go to Cuba.
Well, better hurry up because things are changing.
Well, that actually probably be good for his business if Trump does go forward with that. Right? Because he helps people get to Cuba when it's not as easy to get to Cuba, even though it's a little bit easier now.
Yeah, but it's like legal now. So if he starts helping people get to Cuba after that happens, then it's going to be illegal. Well, he's going to be telling them to go in through Mexico.
Yeah, he'll have to live in Cuba full time so they can't get him. So today's show, we're going to talk about... I mean, this is just something I've struggled with forever. It's why we have a Tribe 10K consulting group. It's why we've been doing this for a while. We're trying to help the people around us that have talent, that have so much potential, yet seem to get in their own way. And that's the idea for the business came out of just helping people be accountable, helping people not waste time on things, on all the shiny objects, not getting sucked into the black hole of all the different things that they could be doing, and focusing on, you know, what their purpose is, what their product is, and just making things simple so that they can actually make a difference and live life on their own terms, right? Because yeah, this is something I've experienced my whole life. I see people around me and I'm like, wow, he's so smart, or she's so smart, she has this much potential or whatever, and they never seem to make progress. They stay in the same place for sometimes years on end, quite literally years on end. And it's always frustrated me. It frustrated me because the world needs more people out there living their true purpose and making a difference and contributing value and whatever flavor that happens to be. And it really, you know, it really bothers me that people are job slaves or debt slaves or even lifestyle slaves because they live a society's idea of having cars and mortgages and all this nonsense. And obviously topic for another day, but it really bothers me. And that's why we decided to do the Tribe 10K to help people just kind of really separate the signal from the noise. And that's a lot of what's going to be successful nowadays with all the noise we have, with all the information we have, being able to distill the signal from all the noise and focusing on that signal is how you're going to get results moving into the new AI dominated world, basically.
Yeah, oh man. So, our robot overlords are coming.
Yes. You got the list in front of you? Because
yeah,
we have a few things here.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
We do have the list. We have a long list. It's a laundry list. We basically, what this came from is we were just downstairs. We were doing one of our group consulting sessions with five of our clients, and they were all there. They all have their different pain points, but they're pain points that are very avoidable sometimes, I guess, if you think about it. And we're trying to help everybody through it, but when we're trying to help everybody through it, it definitely can get frustrating.
Yeah, I mean, it's because each person has their own dogma. They have their own ideas. They have their own distractions. And it's really hard to break free from that. And this is true for all humans. Like, we usually can only default to what our, lowest level of awareness is. And ideas that you haven't experienced or that you haven't pursued or that don't really come to mind, they're not things that you can implement, even if somebody's sitting in front of you telling you you should do this. It's very hard to take that information and actually do something with it. And that's what frustrates me, because I just want to tell people, like, okay, just stop. Don't stop thinking about that. Stop doing anything. Stop pursuing it. And just do what I tell you step by step and you'll be successful, right? Then you can address these things later on. But you can't really tell people that. And even if you do tell them that, and even if they agree with you, they're not going to do it. It's just, it's just the way it is. It's a constant reinforcement. It's a constant battle. You constantly have to keep people accountable. They're going to fail along the way. They're going to have some successes, some failures. Like, I understand this is a process, but that doesn't mean it's not frustrating, because you can kind of see through so much of the noise that people get sucked into. And you're just like, I see this so clearly. Why can't you? Right. And that's the big struggle for me. I have to be patient. This is good training for me in a lot of ways, because I have to work around people's default, right? Their mindsets, their dogmas, whatever. And I have to try to be patient and give them time to evolve and to make the progress or whatever. Like, they can't just overnight do the things I want them to do or be as good as I want them to be or whatever. Right.
Right.
And that's kind of the struggle for me, because I'm always like, now, impatient. Life is short. We could die tomorrow, et cetera. And, there's a counterpoint to that. The counterpoint is to, like, give yourself time, enjoy the ride. Like, there's a lot of things here. So we're going to unpack some of the common things that I see, and try to just really give them service. If some of these resonate with you, then these are probably signs that these are some things that you should really be thinking about yourself, trying to be aware of. And these are probably things that if you could address them and become more self-aware and avoid these pitfalls, you will get better results in almost everything. I mean, this could apply to weight loss, to going to the gym, to your work, to your relationships, everything. Like, self-awareness and just not getting sucked into all the nonsense is just a life skill.
It's rooted in, we're on ancestral mind kind of here, right? Like, there are ancestral reasons for this stuff to happen. There's a reason that everyone's default is to do this. And there's a reason why we have to kind of take that wheel and yank it to the side and get it moving slowly, 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 while reprogramming the wheel the entire way. So that there's a lot. If you're, as we're going over these, you're like, man, I do that, but I'm not like those people, or I'm not like the people who are messing up. Everyone is. Everyone's like this. It's okay to hear these things and be like, yeah, I do that. You need to be aware of that. Once you're aware of that, once you know that there is a problem there, once you know that there's a bias there, once you know that you're going to default to eating carbs because carbs are the tastiest thing and they were made to be the tastiest thing, so we would spread the seed and then we would store the fat, but now we don't have to do that anymore. Once you understand that, now you can make a more informed choice and be aware of it and move yourself around and out of it.
Well, so in the ancestral mind, we talk about the mismatch principle, right?
Yeah.
Our biology is not set up to do well in an environment that has food always available, that has sex or like porn example always available, that has distraction always available, that has like negativity on the news always available. We get sucked into these things because it's not the environment we evolved in, right? When it comes to business, and ladies and gentlemen, hear me out on this. When it comes to business, when it comes to focus, when it comes to creating anything where you have to not get sucked in to distractions or your phone or all the different bells and whistles or the grass is greener, like, we are not designed to be successful in our modern world. And I've always wondered about this, like, are some people just born with the skills, or does something happen in their life where they just want it so bad that they're able to overcome these things or whatever? I don't know the answer. I think some people have genetic predispositions to doing things. Like, some people are really good at math, or some people are really good at focusing, or some people get like lost in flow states and like programming or whatever it is, right? There's definitely genetic variability to these things. But for the most part, being generally successful and then living a balanced life, they're almost incongruent in a lot of ways, right? And so like, there's always something for somebody to work on. You might be Jeff Bezos, but then you have trouble spending enough time with your kids. You might be Elon Musk, but then you might, again, having trouble spending time with your kids and not being stressed about manufacturing problems or whatever.
Or like, need to stop tweeting about stock prices.
Yeah, so exactly.
The SEC finds you.
And so there's always something for us to work on. And that's kind of, it's part of the fun of life, really, is to be doing this. But the thing that I always struggle with is people not making progress. That's what really gets me. It's like literally staying in the same place that you were a year ago. It's insane.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we live in the most abundant and the most opportunity rich time in the history of mankind. I mean, you could literally go online with your phone and start a YouTube channel, a vlog. You could start a blog and you could be writing. You could write and self-publish a book on Kindle for free. You literally only need a Microsoft Word format, and then you upload to Kindle, which is a free account, and then you can sell it to the world. Like, it's actually insane what you're able to do. Okay. But people still don't take advantage of it. Yep. Right? Like, why is that?
Smart people don't take advantage of it. Here's the thing that I saw that really set this in stone for me years and years ago. I would play a ton of poker, and I would be sitting at a poker table with massively successful business people. And these massively successful business people were absolutely terrible at poker. And in my mind, I'm ascribing that to their actual intelligence. And for many of them, it was. There's people that are sitting in front of me that are playing poker with me. They suck at poker, but I can also tell they're a complete idiot. But I know they have a successful business. And why is that? It's because they aren't doing all this other random BS in the middle, and they're just taking action on their business. And it turns out that all the smarts and all of the rest of it in the world doesn't matter if you don't take action. And those people are getting around all of that, and they're becoming successful at business, even though they're dumb. And then then you have the people like Elon Musk, who have both, who they happen to be ridiculously successful, ridiculously smart, and ridiculously good at taking action. And that's where that was the epiphany for me.
So we need to add some disclaimers and caveats to what you said, because it was pretty broad to claim someone, you know, is just dumb. Maybe they're dumb at playing poker, but that doesn't mean they're dumb.
There were some that were both.
But like, here's the thing. Like, you don't need, some people might be dumb in common sense. You might be dumb in math. You might be dumb at this. Everybody has their strengths and their weaknesses. The people that are successful usually figure out the one thing that they're good at. And then they do that over and over and over again until they have success.
Right.
Right. And that's actually a superpower at this point, because part of the thing that makes people fail today is they don't know how to focus on one or few things. Mm-hmm. It's always more, 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 too much noise, blah, blah, blah. Right. And that is why, if you can figure out one thing or two things, and this is what we have to do with our clients every time, we're like, okay, well, what's the number one thing you focus on? Almost, they can almost never answer that question. They literally try to list off seven things. I'm like, no, I said, what's the number one thing? They don't know. Most people don't even know how to make a qualitative judgment to determine what the number one thing they should do is. And that, in business, I can tell you, is a failing, right? Yeah. It is. It's an absolute failing. Either you're leaving money on the table, or you're sabotaging your growth, or it's why you're staying in the same place, or it's why you're not making any money, or you're not making as much, or whatever it is, right? Not being able to identify what the big things are, and then focusing on a daily basis on how to improve those in some way, is probably the biggest failing I see today. Now, if you have a business, if you're making money, you know, a lot of times you can probably figure out, like, what's the thing that's costing me the most money, or what's the thing that's most stressful or whatever. And you can probably find your one thing in that. But what about people that just want to get something started? Like, they're not doing anything, or maybe they have like a website, or maybe they try to sell a product on Amazon, or maybe they're trying to get a coaching or client or whatever. Like, figuring out what that one thing is, and like what that power activity is to help you focus on that one thing on a daily basis, and then developing a habit around that. That's what everyone needs to do. And so maybe we can unpack some ideas of how to do that and what that would look like. And then obviously the habits around is another topic that we'll get to next, because even if you identify that one thing, if you don't have a daily replicatable system to focus on it daily and make progress on it daily, you're not going to be successful. It's just kind of what it is, right?
Right.
And so there's a couple analogies here, like the one that I talked with Ebony about, one of our clients, the analogy of pulling a cart up the hill, or let's say pushing a boulder up the hill or whatever, right? If you were tasked with pulling a cart up a hill, or pushing a boulder up the hill, and you decided that day one, you're going to push it up as far as you can go, but then day two, you're just not going to do anything. And so the boulder's going to come back down.
Yeah.
Right. And then, okay, so day two and three, or three and four, I'm going to push it up. But on day five, I'm going to stop again. Well, on day five, you end up in the same place you were on day one. You haven't gone anywhere. You've gone up a little bit and you come back. And this is the perfect analogy to things with business, especially like online business. Consistency and pushing that boulder up the hill and keeping it moving up the hill, even if it's an inch a day, is the secret sauce. It shouldn't be secret, but it is, because people, what they do is they do a little bit, they get motivated, and then they go back to letting the boulder fall right back down the hill. They lose all their momentum. In fact, this isn't just an analogy. Like, think about something with Amazon or even like YouTube. You get all this algorithm juice, you're getting results, you're getting shares, and then you just stop posting, and Google's like, oh, I'm not gonna show your shit anymore. Or Amazon's like, oh, I'm not gonna promote your products anymore. Like, This shit is, it's an analogy, but it's also how the fucking computers work, yeah. right? So it's like, you have to be consistent. You have to keep pushing the boulder up the hill. If that means posting every single day to YouTube, if it means doing a daily vlog, if you're going to be a blogger, posting a blog every day or 3 days or whatever your schedule happens to be, you have to keep that movement going forward. And so the number one, I would probably say the number one mistake I see people make that are trying to build a business or build a brand or do anything is they don't have a daily work habit. And I tell people this, not Monday through Friday. Monday through Sunday,
right?
7 days a week. Even if that means on Sunday, you do like an hour of work. Like, you have to keep pulling that cart up that hill, keeping that slack going, keeping it moving, or you will literally keep falling to the same place. And you'll end up being a lot of the people I've seen around me in my life, the same place they were a year ago. Yeah. And that's not where you want to be. Anything to add to that point?
I mean, yeah, I don't want to be crushed by a boulder. And you're 100% right that that's the way business works. You've run into it yourself. Wild Foods. Anytime you run out of product, how much harder is it to get traction
still on that
exact thing?
Still struggle with that.
Because because it got so popular, you ran out of it for a week, and Amazon punishes you because you ran out of it for a week.
It takes even longer to get it back, too. To get back to that same level, and then the growth you miss out. I mean, I would probably guesstimate I've lost... Actually, we did the numbers.
Multiple millions.
2018, we guesstimated that we lost about like $800,000 to $1 million in just sales that we would have had if we just stayed consistent. Not if we grew. This Amazon basically said, if you kept this stock in and you maintain your average rate, which, if, you know, for anyone that sells on Amazon, they know when you kind of hit a daily rate, you kind of tend to stick to that. We would have made another $1 million. But because I stocked out of my best sellers, I was out for 60 days. Another one was out like three times throughout the year. But each time it went out, it was hard to get back. Like, literally, guys, $1 million. And then the 3 years before that, I probably could have quadrupled the business by that time because the same problem. And I'm even dealing with it to this day.
And a lot of that was out of your control, but the parable still remains the same. The fact that if you had just let that be out of your, like if it was something else, like let's say you could have controlled that and you just decided, well, I'm not going to post today or I'm not going to do this thing today.
But it was in my control. I fucked up.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh.
Why do you think we got rid of the warehouse?
Yeah, you're right.
We launched literally 50 SKUs, maybe even 60 SKUs, different teas, different things, all amazing products. I was really excited about them. We did that for a year. Built a warehouse, got to about 30 employees, bought all these tables, did all these things, pallet racks, blah, 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 right? And then I'm like, you know what? I'm still stocking out of my best sellers. Why the fuck am I stocking out of my best sellers when I'm focused on all these things that like one product might be doing $500 a month, one might be doing 1,000, and it's cool, it adds up, but I'm not investing my funds into my best sellers. And as a result, I'm sabotaging the real growth that I could be having, right? And as a result, the impact and reaching more customers and really doing everything that we stand for at Wild Foods, I was really missing it because I was going too wide instead of being too narrow. So I'm the perfect case study because I learned this the hard way, guys. I did a vlog the other day. What I learned losing $500,000, that was just from the warehouse mistakes and all the stuff I had to buy and the employees and the extra payroll. That wasn't from like just being out of stock. So if you really did the numbers, I was probably
closer to $2 million.
$1.5 to $2 million, right? And again, you know, I throw these big numbers out there. We're a bootstrap company, guys. My salary is lower than most of my employees. I don't make money from the business because I'm invested in growth. Every penny goes back into the business. It's something I've learned years being a business owner. You constantly invest in the business, grow the business, you know, make sure it's healthy, et cetera. And, you know, because we're bootstrapped, it takes time to actually make money from these things. So like, I'm not trying to say like I'm out buying Lambos or living in big houses or anything like that. Like I'm very much still a bootstrapped growing business owner. And if anybody in CBG knows, like every penny you get has to go back into the business because you have to buy more stock and more stock and more stock. And it's just like a hungry monster that just wants money, 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 money.
Right.
But I would have probably been doing double or triple what we're doing this year if I would have not gone the whole 50 new products route. And if I would have just put every penny back in a few select products. And again, this is Pareto's principle, 80-20, right? And I've done the numbers. We generate about 80% of our revenue from like 10 products.
Right.
Which makes it even more asinine that I was like, let's go wide. And like, I think it's okay to go wide in some instances, and there's a lot of brands doing this. It really depends. But I also think a lot of brands do the wrong way. Like if you look at some of these other supplement brands, you know, Onnit, Bulletproof, a couple other ones. Dr. Axe brand or whatever.
Four
Sigma. But when you have a brand, it's the, or any business, the urge is to go wide and do all these different things, right? But if you look at all the case studies of all the big companies that have done that, like it almost always fails, right? It just doesn't work. And so like I've read a couple books in this recently about how you should innovate around the products you have. I mean, even Apple, when Steve Jobs came back to the company, they got rid of about, I think 80% of the products.
Yep.
And like they had all these different, they had like spreadsheets and they had a gaming thing. They had all these different things and a lot of business units of people that weren't very happy that their products were getting killed. And Jobs is like, no, we're literally getting down to like, we're going to have four computers and we're going to have like one thing, this one, that, and we're gonna have the iPod or whatever. Like it was crazy. And as a result, Apple is Apple today. In fact, you want to know what Dell said when that happened around that time? Somebody asked Michael Dell, the owner of Dell company, right?
Right.
What would you do with Apple if you were Jobs? And he said, oh, I would sell everything and give the money to shareholders.
Wow.
And then, yeah, that was then. And now we obviously know how bad of a mistake that would have been. You know?
Yeah, Dell. We're getting Dell. Yeah, exactly. Nobody said that in like a million years.
I made this mistake. It's something that even every day with these crazy expensive lessons, I'm constantly having to ask myself, am I focused on the few things? Am I putting all my effort into the biggest, baddest things, like the most important things? And should I do less?
And you know what your best attribute through all of that was? Your willingness to let go of ideas or put them on hold.
It took time. But even to this day, I still do it. And it's like, This is like a habit that even when you're good at it, I mean, I broke a lease. I closed the warehouse. I eliminate tons of products. I have like probably $20,000 in labels that I'm not using that are sitting there. And that's basically a loss, right?
Right.
So it's like, it's not an easy thing to do. And there's this concept called sunken cost fallacy, which I actually don't fall victim at all. All I can think about is the future. So if I have an investment or I've done things and I don't think it's going to pay off, I'm like, we're going to stop tomorrow.
Right.
And so I'm very fortunate in that way, probably because I've studied the concept so much, but it's the idea that people, like you find this in gambling, people start losing money and they have to stay to try to win their money back. And so they end up just losing more and more money as they get more and more disillusioned with the game or whatever. And that's why a lot of times they say poker players, it's all about how you quit, right? It's not even about like how you win. So it's a hard thing. I'm still learning. And I want to bring this back though to kind of the people that are trying to do things in life, because I know I'm getting a little bit off tangent on that. But it's still a hard lesson to learn. I'm not good at it.
Right. Everyone's going to fight that, because the reason these biases exist is it's your brain's default way of doing things. So The sunken cost fallacy of, man, I've been working at this company for 3 years. I can't just up and quit and start my own business.
Yep.
I've already given this company 3 years. You know, I'm invested here. It's oftentimes, now not always, but oftentimes it's the wrong decision to continue
relationships.
With that. Relationships, yes.
I've seen it more than anything in relationships, right? Business ideas, products, whatever. Like the more people invest in things, the harder it is for them to stop, even when the writing's on the wall that they should stop. Yeah. And that's a huge thing. I mean, corporations have done this, individuals, it's prevalent, and it's because it's a human bias, right? It's universal to humans, okay? So what can we do though? Because I want to get back to like why people sabotage themselves, some of the common mistakes people make, mistakes of the mind, their dogma. What are some other things we got here? Unwillingness to let go of ideas or put them on hold. Let's talk about that, because that's what I saw today.
Well, we just unpacked a lot of that, but we did see a lot of that in the meeting today, I think.
Well, yeah. And it's not just like the answer isn't just let go of your ideas. People have a hard time putting them on hold.
Right.
Like what I found when you talk to people about business and you talk to them about ideas and cool things to do, everybody's 100%, this is awesome.
Yeah.
Right. But when you get down to like, well, what are you doing on a daily basis? What's your next step? What's the actual work you're going to put in for this thing? And can you stop thinking about all the shiny objects so you can do that one thing? Right. That is the hard part. And what happens is people get so focused on the shiny, cool objects that it keeps them from doing the daily grind. Right. And it keeps them from building the foundation. And like with our clients, what is our foundation, Brent, with our clients?
Our foundation's website, opt-in, email list. That's it.
Well, their daily spreadsheet hub.
As far as what we use Asana for all the task management.
It's literally a system for what they're actually doing.
Yeah.
And then it's very systematized, the back end in their business and everything. And I did actually have some lists of like, we will, you know, if you haven't started a business or if you're interested in business, I want to have a list of like the foundations of a business, at least today, of how to build a business. I think that would be really cool and actionable, and we should throw that in there. So stick around. We're going to get to that soon after we cover some of these other things. So we have this foundation for people, and we do a meeting today, and we're trying to basically review what parts of the foundation has cracks in it. Or like I use the analogy, like you're trying to build the second story when you have the house is on stilts and you only have three pillars built, right?
Right.
Like you might be okay building the first or second level, but then level three with the way it's going to collapse. And that's what a lot of people try to do, is they try to jump ahead way too much. Right? They don't even know how much to price their product, and they're trying to talk about doing like partnerships and shit. I'm like, no, you shouldn't do anything like that. And this is where the idea where the lean startup comes in. Now, have you read The Lean Startup?
No, I haven't. I mean, I know I should, but I have not read The Lean Startup.
It's a must read.
But in fact, I think I own it. I just haven't opened it.
It's a great book. Do you know what the principles of that method are, or that in a nutshell? I mean, I've talked about it quite a bit.
Yeah, my principles from that are going to be basically what you and I have talked about, what I've talked about with other people. But a lot of it is like just stop. Don't go out and buy a bunch of t-shirts. Don't go out and buy a bunch of business cards. You need to, when you have very little funds to place, you need to place them in the places that have
but
the most
impact. But even if you have a lot of funds.
Oh, so just ignore it anyway. All right. Well, I haven't read the book, so.
It's very much geared towards startup companies, and a lot of the analogies and use cases are software, because the waterfall method, and I believe that's right, maybe somebody can correct me, but the waterfall method was you build a big software product. I'm pretty sure it's what Microsoft used. I don't quote me in the waterfall. I might be wrong on that. But basically, they use the example of Microsoft. They built this huge, it might've been enterprise software. I don't know what the hell it was, but it was a big piece of software that took like 2 years and millions of dollars. And then they go say, hey, here is this product we built. Please buy it. Nobody bought it. Right.
Yep.
And so that was like one of the lessons that either he learned or someone learned. Instead, the new method is like you put out what's called an MVP, a minimum viable product. It's like the barest amount of software to like kind of do the thing you're trying to do. And then you give it to people and you say, what's your feedback? And you see if maybe you launch it for free and you see how people are using it. You see if they're logging in enough. You see if they're giving you feedback about what they want. You're seeing if, then you even say, are you willing to pay for this or whatever? Like there's a lot of different ways to do this, but it's basically like getting prototypes to real customers and getting them to ideally give you money at some point, either as right. like a pre-sale or a beta user or something like that. And then taking the feedback and figuring out where you should spend your time and money, right? Instead, you have companies like focus groups, which is like they've proven is like the most absurd thing ever. Like people go in and basically answer questions that they think you want to hear. It has nothing to do with real life data and like whether people are actually going to buy or not, right? And there's been, I would say billions of dollars at this point deployed to things based on focus groups that then failed in the marketplace.
Yeah, people because like, don't know what they want even. Yes. Like even if they're trying to be genuine,
yeah,
they're going to fail.
Until you do things like Steve Madden does. So there's a really cool video on YouTube. We'll try to link to it. But Steve Madden is a shoe company, right?
Right.
And so
Wolf of Wall Street fame.
They put the shoes. They'll like design a shoe. They'll conceptualize a shoe. And I think they'll do like one size and one color. And they'll go to, I believe it's Saks or some stores in New York in different markets, right? And they'll literally offer a certain amount for sale. And then when people go and try to buy the shoe, if they can't fulfill it, which I actually don't think they can, they might even like put only a few shoes out. They take data of every person that wanted to buy the shoe that like asked for it. And they basically say, sorry, we don't have the shoe right now, but you know, can we contact you later or whatever? And if they get enough data points, they've been able to prove because they've done this process so many times, they can do that process, get the data, and then know exactly how many shoes to make. And then they go and like make a million of them. And right. And they sell the hell out of them because they have actual data. Tim Ferriss, do you know the story of how he figured out the book title and the book cover?
No.
He used the same process. He used Google AdWords.
You're talking about the four-hour work week.
Yeah. So two things he did. He used Google AdWords and he ran ads based on, I guess, the book cover title and like buy the book basically. And he tested different things that got different clicks and whatever. And they would go to a landing page and then it was like, oh, sorry, book's not available right now. Right. But he would track how many people put in their email address or clicked or whatever. And he would use that as a gauge for what got more results. He also printed a fake cover of the books, put it on a fake book in the actual bookstore, put it face out and sat there and watched people. How many people an hour go up and grab that book?
And then realized it was a fake book.
Exactly.
That's so.
But think about great. It. It literally, like, you might get kicked out of a few stores doing that. But no one would even know actually half the time. And you would have actionable data. Like this person literally tried to grab his book and like you saw them like frown when they couldn't even like open it or whatever. Like this is shit that is very counterintuitive in business. Yet it is how 99% of businesses should operate, especially the individuals, right? Like, oh, well, why don't you add something? Because I need a breath.
No, what you're explaining there is somebody breaking down something to the first principles and understanding the failings of humans. You can implant a memory in a human very, very easily. You can implant a thought in a human very, very easily. That's why psychics are even a thing. That's okay. Why they exist. Like you can make somebody think you have a psychic ability just by saying things in the correct way. Another study that they've done, if I went up and said to a group of Republicans, hey, do you remember that time that Obama did this really shitty thing? And they're like, yeah, they would remember it. They would write 100% they remembered it. 10 out of 10. Mm-hmm. And it never happened. It was a complete false fabrication. It's not like it happened with a Republican. It just never happened at all. But they, because of their massive internal bias, you have now created this memory of Barack Obama doing something that he didn't do.
So how does that apply to the Lean Startup Method?
Well, that so what you're saying, when people, they're going after the data that they think matters. They're like, all right, I want to do a survey with these people and talk with these people on this survey. But like you said, yeah, their mind isn't going to do the right thing. They're going to put what they think you want to hear, especially if they're being paid for it.
They use like leading questions and like stupid shit like that. Like
leading questions are even worse. Like,
yeah.
And they do that on accident, but also it sabotages them.
Yeah.
If you put that in the question and then the person answers it in the way that you're hoping to get, you didn't get any real data. You just got the data of, yes, if I worded my question this way, people would answer it this way, rather than learning anything about your product.
Most people
don't even do that
though. Most people just straight up, I think somebody wants this product.
Yeah.
And like, that's all they do.
Yep.
The best entrepreneurs though, get out there and talk to their audience, their market. They talk to real life customers.
Or look at how their audience acts. Look at what their audience does.
Yeah, but also a lot of that comes actually talking to them.
Yeah, because sometimes you can ask.
But a lot of times you have to actually get out there and be interacting with customers in some way.
Right.
You know, and there's a lot of ways to do this. There's a lot of tools. There's a lot, you know, you could literally just observe, like go to a competitor product or a demographic or niche and just read the reviews, right? Read the coffee shop negative reviews in your area of all the coffee shops and just take all the negative things and do all those perfect. And you probably have a pretty good business right there.
Right.
Like you could open it right next to one of the coffee shops, right? And you'd probably be fine. And so these are just examples of things that, you know, as entrepreneurs, is that kind of type A personality. We tend to like want to be creative and we think our ideas are good or whatever. And sometimes we don't even want that data. And so we just want to create and just like trust that it's going to work or whatever. Sometimes that data, that feedback can hurt because it can challenge your beliefs and challenge your dogmas. And so this is not something that really comes easy, right? Corporations fall into this trap. Individuals fall into this trap, right? It's just one of those things. And so getting out there, interacting, asking customers questions or polling them or finding out things that they talk about, like what pain points they struggle with and how can you maybe build a product for that? And then build a prototype or there's just so many ways to do this. We can't even really get into it, but this Lean Startup Method and the thing that we really try to instill in our clients like today that in the meeting we had was you need to stop doing all of the things around this until we've made your first dollar. And that is probably the number one thing for the Lean Startup that most people listening right now could take away if you have a business or whatever it happens to be. Like, don't worry about, like, let's say coaching, for example. Don't worry about how you're going to service the client or build this amazing, like a meal plan or this big coaching program, whatever. Literally get somebody to pay you. Then figure it out. Cross the bridge when you get to it. Stop trying to cross the bridge before you get to the bridge. That's probably one of the biggest mistakes I see in anybody trying to build a business is they want to do all these other shiny things and they want to cross bridges before they're even about to step on the bridge.
Yep.
And it's just a huge mistake. It's a huge waste of time. There's opportunity cost. A lot of times you don't even know this business is going to work. So why would you invest all this time? And most people think wrongly that if they spend a bunch of time and money and build this great thing, that the marketplace is just going to reward them. And that is not how it works, ladies and gentlemen.
I have a random perfect anecdotal example of this. And outside of even Tribe 10K, what we did with that. But some of the listeners know that I am partnered up with people on escape rooms. And one of the escape rooms, what we ran into was the groups were too big for what we had. We only had two rooms in that particular location, and we were getting people that wanted to do groups of 60, groups of 40, and we couldn't fit them in there. Mm-hmm. So we thought there was a need for this, and we're like, well, let's create a mobile escape room experience. Let's do something that can take 100 people.
Serve a bigger group?
Right, we could go to them.
Okay.
We could go to them with like a truck and put up tents or whatever.
Sure.
We thought this was a great idea, but we weren't sure. So what did we do? We reached out to those people who had the groups that were too big for us. And we said, we're going to do this. If you would like to be a part of this, you have to put down this deposit. Mm. And we made sales. And once we made sales, we built it after that. We didn't build it until we had gotten people to put down the deposit on building that particular thing.
That's exactly it. So the data you had was, but you even had like pretty actionable data. You probably could have semi-safely done that. Because you had business data. Like
we had people that we couldn't serve.
You had customers that were literally trying to buy from you, right? Mm-hmm. Which is kind of the thing that you really want. And it's the thing that most people don't get, right? But you did it even a step better. Like getting deposits, pre-sales, I mean, Kickstarter even. Like people kind of understand that they can pay for things ahead of time and then get it later. Like that's the thing, right? And these are things that we really need to use to your advantage. And like you can pre-sell a course. You could pre-sell. I mean, I pre-order Amazon books all the time. Like from the authors that I trust, I'll buy it the second it pops up,
right?
You know,
that helps them. It's great for getting the message out. It's awesome.
Okay. So we covered a little bit, a lot, I would say. Let's move on.
All right.
We live in a social media world. Everybody gets that. And you see even media companies, you see the multi-billion dollar influencer market falling for this. The numbers, the likes, the comments, whatever, a lot of these vanity metrics, followers are, it's a big business. I mean, there's influencers that have been able to get like fake followers and then they charge thousands of dollars for posts,
right,
even though their audience is like unengaged, either fake accounts or people in India that are never going to buy or whatever. Like this is actually a legitimate problem. It's also a problem that businesses fall into, because what does everyone tell you? What does every social media guru tell you? Well, you need to be on Instagram. You need to be on Facebook. You need to be on Twitter. You need to be doing all those things, right? And the reality is, for some businesses, it can be great. Social media can be a great thing and generate a lot of sales. For most businesses, though, social media is actually probably more of a distraction than anything. And I've learned this even with Wild Foods. We have a physical products business, and we spent a lot of time and money into Instagram, and it just doesn't generate the kind of revenue that some other things do. It just doesn't. It's more of a long play. It's a branding play. That's why I'm okay with it. But I can tell you, the amount of time and effort and even money we put into social media, YouTube, Instagram, all these different things, like, you don't get that money back right away. So it is very much an investment. But we are also a brand that can benefit from social media. There's a lot of brands like a local pool company. There's probably a lot of things I can't even think of, like a lawyer even. Like, you know, there's exceptions to this, but most of these different businesses should not even spend a second on most social media.
Now, I want to point out, that's not to say they shouldn't put out content. Content yes. is very, very good for them.
And that's different from social
people
media.
People will
right?
read something like Content Inc. and they will take that to mean, oh, I got to be on Instagram posting
yep.
videos.
Yep.
No, what you need to do if you're the pool company is you need to put out videos yep. about how you go and, about buying a pool.
And articles. Yep.
Yeah. And yep. then all of a sudden you have content that somebody can consume, build trust. And now when somebody tries to buy a pool in Austin, Texas, they're like, oh, actually, I watched a video that helped me buy my pool in Michigan. Mm-hmm. Guy in Austin does it. You should look him up.
Yeah. And the thing about content versus social media is social media content you put out is not SEO searchable. It doesn't give you any juice with Google.
Right.
When you post a video or you post an article to your website, that can get picked up by Google. So if you are a pool builder, for example, and you have like the 10 things you must know before building a pool, buying a pool or whatever, or like all the regulations for building a pool in Austin or whatever happens to be, like all these different kind of local SEO terms you can search for, you should absolutely build content for that. And you should put it in those places where it can be found, because that can generate a real ROI for your business. And there's examples of small businesses that have done this, that have leveraged content to like become the go-to leader in their market. Like right. it's insane. There's a lot of opportunity here. But what people think that means is going on social media and like posting daily stories about their life and stupid cat videos and like random shit like that. Like stuff that is just such a waste of time, doesn't actually serve your purpose. And in some ways can even maybe hurt your brand, right? Especially if it means you're ignoring the big important parts, because you're getting sucked into like, how many followers do I have? And how much engagement did this post get or whatever, right? A lot of those vanity metrics are just, for most businesses, they're just that, they're vanity and they're a distraction.
And they're very easy to fake.
And it's what you see everybody wanting to do. Everybody yep. wants to be famous. But what most people should want to do is to make real money and then live a real lifestyle based on having that money, right? Mm-hmm. People want like the entrepreneur lifestyle, but they think that means having like 100,000 followers and then posting like yourself in front of a Lambo, like as if that's somehow how you're going to make money in business, right? But it doesn't work that way, you know? Like as much as I love Gary Vee, people misconstrue his message, right? They think it's about like hustle, grind, be everywhere, right? And sometimes he does talk about those type of things, but what they have to do is they have to take it into context. For someone like him that has a team behind him, that has multiple businesses that can that benefit from it, him being on social media every day is probably the highest leverage activity he can do in that position.
Right.
For someone trying to make their first dollar or whatever, or I mean, like coaches, to some extent, they can benefit from social media.
If you're a model, you should be on social media.
Yeah, it depends. Like there's a lot of examples here, but even then, you should be very selective about what you're posting, how much you're on there, like scrolling and consuming content, because that's another right. trap people fall into. And then do you have anything to capture that audience? Like we've talked about this with our clients. They always want to post. They always want to do this. They want to do story every day. They're like, oh, I get so much engagement. I get so much. But we're like, okay, well, are you directing them to your website? No. Are you directing them to your opt-in? No. Well, then you're just like fishing. It's like fishing without a net, or it's like fishing with holes in your net. Like you're not actually capturing a real audience that you can control. You're not capturing emails. You're not building a very close kind of trust-based relationship. The only thing that you can do when you have an email list, right? So, you know, these are, I know we're getting a little bit in the weeds on this, but It's just a mistake I see a lot is people getting sucked into the vanity and the image of social media and followers and likes and connecting that to making money and having a business. And they're not the same thing at all. Right. And I think for most people, they should not try to be Insta famous at all. They should try to make money by solving a problem for an audience and then delivering value to that audience. And a lot of times what that means is like, you're not going to be able to have 100,000 Instagram followers if your niche is small enough to have that, right? Like what I tell people is if your niche doesn't appeal to 13 to 16 year olds, you should never try to have a lot of Instagram followers because most of them are like young kids, right? Yep.
I would say I'm a pretty good example of this. I have multiple successful businesses. If you Google me, you will find all of them. If you Google my name, Brent Philbin, you will find exactly what I do in my life. Mm-hmm. I don't have an Instagram account.
Right.
Not like I don't post on Instagram. Like I don't even have one. Doesn't exist. I have completely ejected myself from Facebook and my social media presence is nothing because I don't have. And actually even one of my business, one of the podcasts that I have, the Crypto Basic Podcast, really should be engaging on social media. And I don't. And it's still successful.
Well, but see, that's the illusion.
Number two crypto podcast. If you Google us, you know, like.
Right. But notice what you just said. You said should.
Yeah.
But you don't know if you should.
Yeah, that's true.
You actually don't know.
I have no actual
evidence.
And
I suspect it probably wouldn't do anything for you. Because if you look at that niche, if you look at crypto and the content and the followers and what you get, it's like a lot of like trading scams and a lot of bullshit. I don't think you could actually use or leverage something like Instagram that much for a crypto podcast.
Which is why I hate being on Instagram or Twitter for crypto, because that's what it is. And that's the opposite of our message for that podcast. Like, but we are you could probably, shutting those people down.
You could benefit from a YouTube channel.
Yep.
Right. And you could benefit from putting out articles and having kind of like a content value portal, because your audience is interested in those topics and they would probably also be interested in video and written content.
Yep.
Right. But that, again, that is completely different than social. And you going to social because you think you're going to promote that stuff, it's one of those like algebraic equations that don't really add up that people think it does. They think like X plus Y equals C or whatever. But a lot of times Instagram is not a good way to market those. Google's a good way. Your show itself's a good way. And then YouTube's a good way. And those can kind of all intermingle. Like that's an equation that works. The illusion is that Instagram can somehow fit into that equation, but a lot of times it doesn't at all. Like you think people are going to like go to your Instagram and then click here and go to your podcast. But a lot of times it doesn't freaking work, man. It just doesn't. Like it doesn't. I mean, we try so hard, right? Now, again, guys, with everything, there are exceptions. There are some people that can make these things work, and there are some use cases where this stuff can work. But even then, it doesn't work as much as people think. That's the thing that they don't understand. Like Instagram, Facebook, they're incentivized to keep people on their platform. They're not incentivized to have people go to your website. They're just not. Even though you can drop links in here or there, most people go on Instagram because they want to scroll. They don't really want to leave the app.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Same thing with Facebook. Facebook's algorithm doesn't want people clicking on things and then going away from Facebook. It's like completely against their business model. So these are just all things to keep in mind. Okay. So what are a couple of things we can cover before we wrap out? Because I know that, you know, people's head are going to probably explode. We're getting way too much right now. and I'm already losing my voice. I can feel it.
I think from now on, what I will say is that anytime I can see Colin on Tilt, I'm going to suggest that we come up here and record an episode.
That's why I knew we should come up here and do like a dual show. That's why I knew we had to do a dual simulcast today, because we need a show for Ancestral Mind. And I know people listen to that. We'll also get value out of this. But let's say you're not in business, right? Because these ideas are really traps that all humans fall into. So let's kind of bring it back a little bit to the ancestral way and something that people can use in their everyday life. And then to wrap up, I do want to cover the foundations list, which I think I wrote down. So what are these broader mistakes? And I would even say like ways to think that are applicable to all humans. What are some that come to your mind?
Well, action first. I don't know how many times we've covered that on both Ancestral Mind and on Tribe 10K, but taking action on anything is significantly better than talking about or discussing ideas or something like that. And I would say the Ancestral Mind podcast is a very clear evidence of that. The Ancestral Mind podcast, based on the downloads that I just saw before we logged onto this episode, is already in the top 8% of all podcasts that exist out there. And we're 18 episodes in.
That's awesome.
And we've only been doing that since I got here to Austin for like 2 months. And we're already in that top percentile of podcasts. Why? Because we have a great audience. We had people, you know, we'd already built a little bit of a brand with Wild Foods, and you've been doing the Wild CEO thing, Drink Your Fat, all that. So we had a great list, but our episodes are also being consumed a lot. Mm-hmm. And that's another factor in the metrics. So first of all, love all of you listeners for helping us do that, for helping us keep this show
Thank you very much, and
really giving us that positive feedback. But number two, we took action. We got here, and within 48 hours of me arriving into town, we are recording the show. Now, if you're looking at the video, you're going to see we have an entire setup with all kinds of expensive mics and that kind of thing. That didn't start that way. We're only 18 episodes in. It started off with a $60 mic that we had grabbed on Amazon and had it sent in 2 days.
Yeah. In fact, what I want you to do is I'm going to go grab the mic that we did use so we can show the video and then we'll talk about it on the show. I want you to map out what were the steps to go from, hey, Brent, you're going to move to Austin. Let's do a podcast. Because, like, you know how many people said that? You know how many people said, hey, let's go start this business. Hey, let's do this. Hey, let's do that. Hey, let's do a YouTube channel, right? But the percentage that actually fall through with it, right? Few and far between. So what are the actual step-by-step guides that we had to do to get there as the minimum viable? Because we didn't have all this set up here, right? No. We had the very basic mic, which I'm about to grab, so go for it.
Yeah, no. So it all started with Colin just the talk. Everyone's had this talk with their friends. They sit down and they're like, man, we should, like, dude, you should move to Austin. We should, like, hang out. We could build this podcast. And everybody has that, like, that conversation with their friend where they've got their best business idea that they've ever had and they're ready to do it. So what happened? I flew out here. We had that conversation. I flew back and I moved out within 6 days. So that's number one action that we took. We got here and we had a little wood table in the middle of a studio. Now, given we're using this studio for YouTube, so it had already been built up a little bit, but
could have been in our house. It could have been in a room.
Yeah, it could have been anywhere. So I'm calling it a studio. It is a one bedroom apartment. Like that's what we have going here. And I was living at it at the time. Mm-hmm. And we had a little $60 microphone, which if you're looking at the video, Colin's got in front of him right now. Anybody can buy this thing on Amazon and connect it right to their computer.
Yeah, real quick. It's an Audio Technica ATR 2100 USB mic. And I actually still use this mic for my screen cast videos that I do for our training and for YouTube. This is probably my favorite mic because I can pull it out in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
I love it. And it sounds studio quality. And you set up, look, I got this little tripod. It's like $6. Can you see that?
Yep.
Right. And this is a little mic tripod that you can get on Amazon for literally $6. This could be at your house in 2 days. You plug the USB into your computer and then you load up. I mean, there's many, you could do Adobe Audition. You could do Audacity, which
Audacity is free. Yeah.
You could do GarageBand even.
GarageBand
and
is free.
And you literally, this is what we do. So we create a show outline. Okay.
Yep.
We go, Brent already knew how to do this, but I've done this in the past myself when I was kind of planning for the show. I was like, podcast outline. And then I listened to Tim Ferriss' show and a couple other shows I follow. And I mapped out what a general outline of their show is. Intro, he does a commercial here. He introduces the guest that he records after the show, except intro music, etc. I literally mapped that out on a very basic Google Doc. And that is our template for every show. We edited it for each show so that we have the intro in there. We have, let's see. This is going to, so we have the topics for the day, general house cleaning, co-host introduction, big idea for the day, bullet points of that topic, end is call to action, like leave a review, some basic stuff like that. We don't even follow this as much as we should each day. Like we should probably be a little bit better at this, but like you can make this as specific and strict as you want, or you can make it very general. So you can kind of like BS around, which is what we like to do. And this is what we do for every show. And so I make a copy of this Google doc, and then we title of the show. Okay. And then we sit down and we record the show. Brent's here. I'm here. If we have a guest, we're here. Okay. And then we have our webcams going, but that's secondary. You don't even need that. In fact, we were recording on the computer webcams in the beginning, right? So we literally have like ScreenFlow on, or what's the free software you use?
It's called OBS, which is Open Broadcasting Studio.
OBS, which is like a free screen recording software. And so you could record the video if you want, or you can just do audio. Okay. And then we hit record. We go through the thing. You know, if we get to a point where someone's like stumbling on their words or there's like, we kind of go off track, we can edit it out, right? We save that file. We get it to an editor. Brent's been doing most of the shows. We also have an editor we work with. I'm telling you, and there's editors, you can get them all over, guys, like Upwork or Fiverr even. Like there's, you can find people to do this, right? I would recommend learning it though. If this is something that you're interested in, you should learn how to do it. Because even then, if you outsource it, you at least know what to expect from those you outsource to, which is a thing, it's kind of a business thing I recommend everybody do. Like you should always learn how to do the basics so that you at least know if you're getting ripped off and you can give valuable insight to make sure it gets done better and more quality.
You know what? I'm going to just throw this out there. You can tell me if you like this or not. If you send us a screenshot of a review that you left us for either one of these podcasts, Tribe 10K or Ancestral Mind, I will send you a video of me editing an episode.
You have that saved?
Yes. And it's yours.
Yeah, that's cool.
For free. It's going to be part of one of the courses that we're doing. We're building that out, but I will send you that video. And if you want to learn how to do a podcast from me doing the editing personally, Brent, talking while I'm doing it, I'll send that
to you. Where are they going to email that to?
Email that to ancestralmind@gmail.com or the ancestralmind, sorry.
Actually, no. See, this is where I get confused.
Fuck. We got to fix our branding.
It is ancestralmind@gmail.com. The website is the ancestral. And we also have info@tribe10k.com.
Yeah, info@tribe10k is probably the easiest one. So info@tribe10k.com, you can send it there too.
Okay. And so back to what it takes to get this started. Okay. So I've basically taken you through every step up into getting edited. Then you publish it to iTunes and these other places. And there's like software that will do this for you.
Yeah, there's 50 different hosting sites that will do this.
Yeah.
We use Pinecast, but there's a million
hosting sites. There's YouTube videos on how to do this. There's no lack of information for stuff, right? You could, in your home, record 5 shows over the course of like a few weeks, and then you could take those shows, get into the hosting platform once they're edited and everything, grab some free music. YouTube has free intro music that you can literally download, okay? And then you submit that to iTunes, and then in a couple weeks, you could have a live podcast on iTunes.
Yep.
Okay. Now this is just an example.
Which is going to provide you way more value than any of that social media you're wasting time on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe. Depending. I mean, if you suck on the show or you're not interesting, then
like, yeah, that's true.
There's definitely some
skill. If you're not interesting, don't do this.
There's definitely some skill to podcasting. I will say that, right? But you can get good at it. Yeah. Anybody can get good at it. This is a skill you can learn for sure. Okay. And so that is an example of taking a big idea like a podcast and just saying, how can I get one show recorded?
Yep.
You know,
and just doing it
and then just do the damn thing. You don't have to like most people. And here, this is how we bring it home. This is how we bring it home. Brent, you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Okay. So we talked to clients about this. We talked to them about their podcasts, and you want to know what the first thing is. Oh, I could get this person. Oh, I could get that person. Oh, we should do this. It'd be so great. All these ideas. And that's great. You get motivated, but you want to know what that does for people? For 99% of people that go there, it makes it so they don't record their first damn show.
Yep.
It's just more resistance. It's more noise. And all they got to do is figure out how to get their $70 mic. In some cases, you could get even a cheaper mic than this, right? You get a lav mic even, right? There's like $10 mics on Amazon. Record your show over a very basic Google Doc outline. Again, free, using free software, free. Submitting to iTunes, free. Hosting site, yeah, maybe you got to pay a few bucks, but it's usually cheap. And you could probably find ways around that if you really had to, whatever, right?
There's
and,
at least one that's free. I don't remember what it's called, but...
Maybe Podbean maybe or something like that. It used to be
Podbean
free.
Has a free version. It's kind of crappy. Yeah. There's one that's like okay and it's free. I can't remember what it is.
Do your research, guys. But again, that's neither here nor there beside the point, right? The fact is you can do this stuff for free or next to nothing and you can have a live podcast. And I can tell you right now, like one of our clients told us the first month, we were able to, what is the thing we got for her that she was so excited about?
Her ebook.
Her ebook was formatted. We literally formatted her ebook, again, using Google Docs, using some very basic stylistic options of font. And like, I'm telling you, shit you can do for free in Google Docs. And because I've done it before, I did it. It took me 10 minutes, right? She told us that we just paid for her 6 months of consulting in that one action. Now, that's why we put this out there because we understand people get sucked into these things, right?
Yeah.
But it's also a byproduct of people not just going out and trying to do things and learning and failing and just that, I mean, getting better. Like, that's how you learn. You got to go out there and you have to take action.
Yep.
Okay. And so if each one of you want to start a YouTube video, let's map that out. What would that look like? Right.
Well, one, you have your phone, you have a good enough camera to get on YouTube right now.
And I would actually tell people, don't even Google best camera.
No,
don't Google best lens. Literally Google how to make videos with my iPhone or how to make like good videos with iPhone or Android. Right. And then set the damn thing up on a bookshelf or some, or if you have to buy a cheap tripod, like they're cheap enough where I would say you could buy that if you wanted to.
$5, $10 bucks, buy a selfie stick.
Right. Or just literally put on a bookshelf and then face the damn camera and either have an outline or just freaking go for it. Yep. Right. And that's your first video or your first vlog or whatever it is. And then what's the next step?
You upload to YouTube, make a description, you pick tags.
Well, you missed a step.
Oh, what a miss.
You might want to edit it.
Oh, yeah. Yes, definitely edit it.
You also got to take it off your phone.
Yes.
Which, if it's an iPhone, you can literally drag it from your Photos app to your desktop, drop it into Adobe or or what's the free one that they have? Like iMovie or whatever?
There's one. If you're on a Mac, you can use iMovie.
There's free movie editing apps. There's iMovie on your phone that's free, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
And you can literally do it with your fingers.
If you have an iPhone. There's also, if you don't have an iPhone, there's one called HitFlix that is open source free editing software. Almost as powerful as Adobe Audition. Yep. So.
And so if you wanted to edit that, what I would recommend doing is edit out any ums and edit out long gaps, right? And that's something that I recommend everybody learn how to do. It's really easy once you get, and it's kind of fun. I really enjoy editing my videos at this point. And it's a skill that I just, I've developed and I like doing it, and it's always going to serve me. And so do the editing or don't. Like, if you naturally don't say or like a lot and you think and you're comfortable with it, then put it out there. That's fine, right? Done is better than perfect. It always is, okay? And then upload it to YouTube and then edit your title based on, you know, in fact, here's a cool, since we're just doing it, might as well. So you go to YouTube and you type in how to X or whatever, right? And it's going to bring up all these different suggested searches,
right?
So do this for your title and find the best title for your video. And then put that in the title, add a few tags, and then hit publish.
Yep.
And you now have a YouTube channel. Then like maybe upload a photo to it and change the title of your thing or whatever. But what you don't want to do is don't go hire someone on Fiverr to do channel art. Don't do all this. Don't buy services. Don't buy TubeBuddy. Don't buy SEO. Literally, don't do any of that shit. Focus on video one, uploaded, published. Video two, upload, publish. Video three, upload, publish. Then all of a sudden
you're going to be good at it.
Then you get good. Then you get subscribers. Then you get feedback. And then you just go more, right? Or you decide that YouTube's not for you and you stop. That's fine too, right? But at least you would have done this the lean startup method.
Yep.
No money, no dollars, not buying a $3,000 camera. Nope. None of the shit that people, like the wantrepreneur shit, that's what they call it. Wantrepreneur. I'm going to buy business cards and t-shirts and all stuff for my brand. I don't even have a product and I've never even sold something yet. Like, don't do that, okay? And this is true, I mean, of everything in life. Like, even people like, oh, I'm going to start going to the gym. I'm going to buy workout shoes and clothes and a Fitbit and all the stuff. You need to just get to the damn gym. Or go outside and run on the street. Do that twice a week before you even sign up for a gym membership, right? Yep.
And when you're on the YouTube channel, more importantly, it is the number two search method behind Google.
Number two search engine in the world.
Yeah. It doesn't go like Google and then DuckDuckGo. It goes Google and then YouTube, which is also Google.
Well, what's your point of that?
The point is, if you put that same video on Instagram, you're not on the second largest search engine in the world.
Exactly.
So put it on YouTube.
Well, and what you can do is you can actually take that video that you edited for YouTube and you can then post it to social.
Yep.
Right? There's ways where you can upload it to IG by changing the aspect ratio. And there's, again, guys, go to YouTube to learn how to do this.
Yep.
Right? Easy to do. And then as you get traction, as you get feedback, as you get results, you can build, right? And there's a quote that I remind myself recently, and this is why I really recommend everybody should be putting out content in some way. Because one, content creation is always going to serve you. Like, there's never going to be a way where you creating content is a bad skill to have, right? Posting on social though, and just like doing kind of dumb shit, like that's not really a skill, I feel like, but creating good content is definitely a skill. So that's why I like YouTube. I like articles. I like writing. I like doing things like that. But let me see if I can find the quote. Here it is. So this guy said this. He said, sizable, loyal audiences will be one of the most coveted products over the next decade.
Yeah.
Okay. That's something I remind myself of. Now, this is where you get into this weird dichotomy because people think, oh, I should just post on social media. But that's not really how you build an audience. You can maybe build an audience that way. But what I found, people that become social media stars, and that's kind of their thing, I'm telling you, it's just luck.
Yeah.
Like, the algorithm hit them one day, a video they put out hit them one day, and they double down. And like, not to take anything away from them, but 99% of people should not be trying to become the next Logan Paul or PewDiePie. They got lucky. I hate to say it. Like, right. I hate to say anyone that got results got lucky, but to become PewDiePie, you have to get lucky.
Yeah.
To become
almost Bill Gates. Everyone who is that at the top at the PewDiePie of their...
Luck played a huge role in it. Now, people did stuff. They took action. So they created their luck. They deserve it. I'm not taking away from it, but you shouldn't make that the metric you try to strive for because you will be disappointed, right? That's why there's a difference between trying to be Insta famous or social famous or YouTube famous versus building like a business and an audience. I mean, there's audiences that might have like 5,000 Instagram followers and 10,000 YouTube followers, small audiences, but because they have such a good audience, they still can really generate change and they can really live a great lifestyle with that.
Right.
Like, it's the 1,000 true fans concept by Kevin Kelly. It's the idea that if you can build 1,000 true fans that really love your art, really love your work, that will buy everything you put out, right? You can make $100,000 a year. Mm-hmm. And he wrote that like 10 years ago, you know, and it's so true. It's so true. So Brent, what do you have to close out this awesome show with that I'm like barely able to form my words anymore. I'm exasperated. I'm going to have to take a nap after this.
I don't know how to put all this together in any way other than what we just said, take action. So if I had one,
well, maybe some of the principles, take action, but also I would add to that, you got to take action every day.
Yeah, that's true.
It's the cart
constant
analogy.
Action.
It's not take action one day and the cart fall back down. It's literally keep that thing moving up that damn hill every single day. Mm-hmm. Okay. And then when you get to the top, you have concepts like the flywheel effect, which is Jim Collins made this famous in Good to Great. It's this idea that you have this flywheel, which if you don't know about flywheels, once you get, they're usually very big, very heavy. And once you get them moving, which takes a lot of energy, they will spin on their own. And there's even ones that are designed where you've probably seen these like little toys where you can like spin it, but it's designed in a way so that it'll keep spinning because it uses like centrifugal force. Well, that same analogy is for your business. When you build a business and you hire employees and you delegate and you do these things where it's not you as a business owner doing things every single day, you create a flywheel effect that then has your customers and your employees running that business without you. And that's really the way to build things. You want to build a brand or build a business that can kind of keep doing things whether you show up every day or not, right? And that's kind of the long-term goal. So that's where everyone should be trying to get to, you know?
Eventually.
Yep.
Start with step one.
So taking action, but on a daily basis, what's the second part to the prong? Like the thing that we kind of struggle with a lot today.
Eliminate the noise.
And just stop doing so much damn shit.
Yeah.
Figure out what your 80-20 is, or even your 95-5 or your 99-1. For most people, right? The results they get comes down to one or two things they do very well. Mm-hmm. And then like everything else is noise. And like I said, in the Waffles example, I should have spent all my energy and all my money on like 10 products. Instead, I had over 100 SKUs, right? And even now we have like 60 SKUs and I still have to make sure that I'm managing my resources very specifically so that I make sure that the best sellers get all the attention, right? Even though I do offer some of the other products. And I'm telling you, I'm not great at it yet. Like, and I still have cash flow issues. There's just a lot of issues that I still have. I'm still learning. It's still something I have to pay attention to on a daily basis. And I don't think it'll ever go away. I think these concepts are things that you have to pay attention to the rest of your life, really. You know?
Yeah, that's like saying sugar addiction is going to go away or something like that. Like, yeah, or you might not eat sugar for 6 months, but I promise you, if you start eating it again, you're going to have a problem.
Or like every day you wake up, you're not going to want to go to the gym every single day or like every week the way you have been. Like you're going to have times where you wax and wane. Your motivation is going to wax and wane. I mean, there's days I wake up and I'm just like, I don't want to do shit today, man. You know, and a lot of times when I feel that way, I'll take a walk and then I'll be like, I'm gonna just work for an hour and then I get over it. You know, and it's like, but it's a constant struggle. I've been doing this shit for 13 years and I still struggle with it. And I think that's another thing people have to, maybe that's what we'll close out with. Don't be so damn hard on yourself. You're not seeking perfection. You need to be seeking process, progress, right? Something, not like, and that's probably the big thing we see is people get motivated and they do a little bit or they do a lot and then their motivation wanes and then they stop. And that's probably, if we could wrap up with the one thing, that is the biggest mistake I see. People don't stay consistent. They try to let motivation be their driver instead of habit being their driver. And I'm repeating my words too much. I'm becoming delirious. So that's going to be all we're going to do for today. Make sure you like and subscribe, guys. Reach out to us, info@tribenk.com. iTunes, you can find us, the Tribe NK Podcast.
Right, yep.
Ancestral Mind, you can find us. You can email us at ancestralmind@gmail.com. Follow me on Instagram, ironically, at Colin Stuckert. Because I do post there. That's the only platform I really post on. And then obviously you can find me on YouTube, the Wild CEO, the Ancestral Mind. Take some action
and leave us that review. I promise if you send us a screenshot, you'll get that video of me editing an episode. It might not be the most interesting thing you've ever seen. It's pretty raw too. I didn't even edit it, but I'll send it to you.
And take action, guys. Start your YouTube channel, start your vlog, do something, and just consistency. Just keep doing it.
I will see you next time.
Later.